All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
Well, welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, a CW-2 helicopter pilot with the United States Army in Vietnam, 1969. I want to welcome you to our program. I'm really excited. We're going to be talking to a couple of sailors today. Actually, they're corpsmen. And so I'm interested in finding out what they have to say about their experiences. It comes from a book that's titled Together We Served, and it's stories of combat Navy hospital corpsmen serving in the Vietnam jungles. So you got to stick around for that. I've got the author here, Bill Sheehan, and also one of the, not the co-authors, but one of the stories in the book, and that's Dan Thompson is going to be on talking about their experiences there. And so I advise you to stick around and listen to that. We've got a little fundraiser that's going on. I'm going to be joined in shortly by another Navy guy who's going to be talking about that organization. And then before we get into that, though, I've got to thank our sponsors for their continuing support. We can't do this program without them. So that starts off with Legal Help for Veterans. Legal Help for Veterans specializes in veterans' disability claims. You can give Legal Help for Veterans a call at 800-693-4800 or go to their website, legalhelpforveterans.com. The National Veterans Business Development Council, better known as NVBDC, is the nation's leading third-party authority for certification of veteran-owned businesses. If you have a veteran-owned business and you want to do business with the federal government and many corporations, you have to be certified as a real live veteran-owned business. These are the folks that you can do that with. So for more information, you go to their website, nvbdc.org, or give them a call at 888-237-8433. The Vietnam Veterans of America, the National Vietnam Veterans of America, never again will one generation of veterans abandon another. For more information, you can go to their website, vva.org. The Charles S. Kettles VA Medical Center here in Ann Arbor, Michigan. For more information about them, go to va.gov/Ann Arbor Healthcare. And finally, the Irwin Prescott American Legion Post 46 and the Charles S. Kettles Vietnam Veterans of America, Chapter 310, both of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Thanks to all of these great organizations for their support. We couldn't be on the air for 20 years without them. All right, so first things first, as they say. So joining me on the line right now is a good friend of Veterans Radio and a good friend of mine, Larry St. Antoine. And Larry was a CB in the Navy back in the day, and now he is involved with an organization called Camp Liberty here in Michigan. So, Larry, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thanks for having me on, Dale. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's good to talk to you again. So, Larry, tell me, what's going on out at Camp Liberty next weekend, correct?
Correct. We're having our yearly fundraiser. This is the second year we've had a classic car and motorcycle show. It's our only fundraiser of the year. We're 138-acre hunting camp for veterans. We have fishing and a lot of other things there. But we decided to do another car and the motorcycle show this year, and we're hoping to get people out. It's on Saturday, June 29th, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at 7044 Kapler Drive, Brooklyn, Michigan. We're about 7 miles west of Manchester on Austin Road. We're not charging anything, but we're asking for donations. $20 per adult, $5 per youth, 5 to 17, and under 5 gets in free. And that includes admission, activities, and a free meal. We're going to have a live band there called the Renegades. I believe they're veterans, and we also have a 50-50 raffle. We'll have first responders and military vehicles, plus MIS NASCAR street team. We're just hoping, what we're praying for is good weather, another thing, but it will be, we will have it rain or not.
Well, as long as it's not quite as hot as it has been the last couple of days out here, I think it'll be great. So this is Camp Liberty's fundraiser. It's their car and motorcycle show. I went last year. The cars are really cool for people that are not quite elderly yet, but, in, you know, can remember back to the 60s and 70s. There are going to be some great vehicles there. Again, it's a $20 suggested donation. Be generous. These guys do great work out there. They provide hunting, fishing experiences for disabled veterans, as well as name a veteran who's not disabled a little bit, as well as for all veterans out there. I see on your flyer that I got, Larry, that there's going to be interaction with horses, petting zoo.
We're having a petting zoo and a bouncy thing. We're kind of this year going into for families too.
Okay, cool.
You know, it's not all veterans are coming. It's outside people that like to look at these cars. So we wanted to have something for children. We're supposed to have a flyover of a twin engine airplane, weather permitting. But basically, if people want to check us out, it's www.CampLibertyMichigan.org. And we have a lot of other things. We're going to be adding things every year. This year, yeah, children will be able to ride a horse when people are leading it.
Okay. No taking off across the plains,
no,
right?
No.
All right. Well, hey, listen, I wish you luck. Larry, as I said, it's a very worthwhile organization, and it's really fun. This event is really fun for not only the veterans, but for the whole family. And this gives the next generation an opportunity to find out, you know, what's going on in their area, because Camp Liberty is kind of out in farm country, and it's a really nice organization. So again, that's out there on, I'll give the address again. It's 7044 Kapler Drive in Brooklyn, Michigan, for those of you that use GPS. It's about 7 miles west of Manchester, and I'm sure there will be signs out there indicating which way to go outside of Manchester on Austin Road. So $20 for adults, $5 for youngsters, all kinds of fun next Saturday, June 29th from 10 a.m. till 4 p.m. Please go on out there. This is what Camp Liberty does. They're building a stronger veteran community. Go out and support them. This is what they do. Thanks, Larry. And as I was telling my other guests today, they are Navy corpsmen. And since you are a Navy CB, and I know you worked with the Marines as well. What is it with the Navy? You're lending out your best people.
Well, you know, someone's got to take care of the Marines.
On that note, we'll end this before studio gets attacked. All right, Larry, thanks very much.
Okay.
I'll see you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Okay. I have too many Marine friends to let this Marine bashing continue on, but that's just the way it is in this world. All right, we're going to continue on right now. I want to bring on, as I mentioned before, the book we're going to be talking about today is titled Together We Served, Stories of Combat Navy Hospital Corpsmen Serving in the Vietnam Jungles. The author is Bill Sheehan. Bill is served as a corpsman and a lot of other things. He's done a lot in his career, not only in Vietnam, but post-Vietnam. And those are some of the things that we're going to be talking about. And also we've got Dan Thompson on, who was a corpsman in Vietnam. And we'll hear some of his stories in just a little bit. So I'm going to start off by welcoming Bill Sheehan. So, Bill, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you so much for having us on. Appreciate it. Always nice to have an opportunity to talk to other veterans or to tell our stories as veterans, and always an opportunity to promote the book.
Well, I think it's interesting. I was thinking the other day that it took you a long time to decide to do this story, to gather these stories, didn't it?
It did. And I don't think I'm unlike a lot of other veterans, and we are the best at taking our combat experience and just pushing it down and not discussing it ever with anyone, even with each other sometimes. And it took 50 years to get thoughts together. And eventually I started reading books, reading stories from other veterans and how veteran organizations are helping other veterans. And the suicide rate among veterans is climbing. And so I did a lot of reading during COVID. So that was a nice 2 years to catch up on a lot of reading. And towards the end of COVID, late 2020, I think I started putting notes together about stories that I would like to write. And I've always written. Even in high school, I enjoyed writing. In college, I enjoyed writing. I worked in the movie industry for a while and eventually started writing screenplays. So writing didn't come difficult for me at all. It was just making notes about what I wanted to say and what I wanted to put in the stories and what was a little bit too graphic to put in the stories, that type of thing. So I started trying to contact old comrades. And I, along with many of my brothers, Navy corpsmen and Marines alike, we just didn't remain close. We didn't communicate with each other for between 40 and 50 years. So I started contacting old names that I remembered during I think it was 2020, right around there, and I was able to get a hold. Through Facebook and Instagram and so forth, I was able to find quite a few of them. And then some of them had names and addresses with others. And I contacted many of the ones that I served with, hence the name of the book. Mm-hmm. And so I have 13 contributors to the book. One, of course, is me. Another one is a trauma surgeon that worked at the 85th Evac Hospital up in Fubai, which is north of Da Nang. And he served from 1970 to 71. The other 11, there was an Iraqi vet that we can talk about in a bit. But the other 11 hospital corpsmen I physically served with when I was in country. Of course, most of us never served together when we were in the jungle because we were assigned to a particular group of Marines, a specific company or platoon or squad. And when we went out on patrol and so forth, we were the only corpsmen. So we didn't really have a chance to work with one another unless it was a big operation and we had, a brigade or a battalion or a lot of Marines where we needed more medical help and so forth. So supposedly we were on a year tour at 6 months in the jungle and 6 months in the rear. Well, the rear really isn't the rear. We still got bombed and so forth, as you know, but a lot of the guys I worked with at the, what we call the BAS, the battalion aid station, one was for a battalion and another one was a bigger. We had two medical officers or physicians, and that was a regimental aid station. And so it was very interesting because when I was in the jungle, I got hit. And the person that took over for me was Dan Thompson. So he took my place in Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 1st Marine. So I was in the hospital for, I think it was 4 or 5 weeks, and then I was returned to my unit. But when I came back, I went directly to the battalion aid station. And shortly after that, and I'm sure he can give you the dates, but shortly after that, we worked together in this big battalion aid station, and that's where we became pretty good friends.
How did you become involved, or what made you decide to become a Navy corpsman?
My dad was a pharmacist mate, which is the old hospital corpsman, and he served on board ship in the Pacific in World War II. And in 1965, when I went to college for the first time, we had a thing called academic probation.
Yes. Okay.
Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Flunked out.
Yeah. I'm familiar with that one.
Yeah. So I flunked out. So I was either going to be drafted in the Army or join the Navy. And of course, my dad was very big on me joining the Navy. I went to the recruiter and I said, I'd like to be a hospital corpsman. Well, actually, I wanted to be a shooter on the deck of an aircraft carrier.
Okay.
You know, the shooter, the guy that tells the jets when to go.
Oh, okay.
You've all seen right. that on Top Gun or any of the big, of course. I said, no, okay, so I want to be a hospital corpsman. And he says, that's no problem.
You know? Oh, that's what I should have said when I tried to join the Navy.
Okay. Yeah, that's no problem. They all get shipped to Vietnam and they're dropping like flies. And so I went to, I think it was late summer, and I signed up right away. And in October, I was in basic training. And after basic training, I went right into hospital corps school. And then I had a duty station, very nice, naval hospital over in Spain, but that was short lived. That was less than a year. And then I went back to what we call FMF. It's Fleet Marine Force, basically combat medicine.
Okay.
So it's similar to Marine Corps boot camp, and you learn how to take care of wounded Marines. And that was in Camp Lejeune. So we both served time in Camp Lejeune.
Okay.
And then, of course, you're shipped off to the country, and that's when we did our year tour.
Okay, I'm gonna go over. I want to introduce to our audience one of the participants in the book, and that is Dan Thompson. So, Dan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thank you for having me.
Well, the proverbial thank you for your service is really kind of a useless thing to say. Thank you for saving all the lives that you saved. That's the best part of what you folks did over there. So how did you decide to become a corpsman?
Well, I really didn't decide. I was initially when I enlisted, and this was, again, I followed very much the same program that Bill followed. First of all, when I was in high school, the draft was in full force, and we sort of knew that we were going to be drafted one way or the other. So I figured that, well, I wanted to go into the Navy, because essentially I've always liked boats in the water, and figured that, well, the Navy is probably better than the Army or the Marine. So when I enlisted, after boot camp, they asked me, well, what would you like to do while you were the same as Bill? What would you like to do while you're in the Navy? And just before I joined, I was actually a draftsman with a Raytheon company. I drew parts for radars and things like that. So I said, well, something like that would be, you know, in some sort of technical field as far as drawing and drafting or whatever. And they said, well, your tests say that your aptitude is good for being a Navy corpsman. So I really didn't have much to say about it at the time. So like Bill, after boot camp, I went back to Great Lakes and did corps school, and went to Camp Lejeune and did the FMF training with the Marines. My initial duty station was Chelsea Naval Hospital, which was the oldest naval hospital in the fleet, in the United States. And so he went to Spain, I went to Massachusetts. So after that, we all sort of knew, you know, as a corpsman, we all knew that eventually we'd be getting orders to go to Vietnam. So I think I was probably at Chelsea maybe 10 or 11 months. And every month they'd come out with a list. Okay, you're going to Vietnam. You're going to be assigned to so and so. So probably around the 11 month mark, I got my orders to go to Vietnam. So there I went. And it was you know, inevitable that we were going to do that eventually. And Bill did say that you know, I took his place. Bill, nobody's going to take your place. I mean, you're
It's a kind of a typical thing, I think, since many of the militaries, you know, this mutual admiration society that I've really come to appreciate, you know, once we found out what each other were doing while we were in the service, especially while we were overseas, you know, all of the stereotypic cliches and jokes that used to be made kind of went out the window when we found out that we, you know, we were all there to save each other's lives and to keep each other alive. I think, you know, I'm not going to get into the political thing of the whole, you know, the whole issue, but it just came down to that camaraderie and the keeping each other alive was the goal. So I'm curious about what, the training involved, without, you know, great detail of what the training involved before you went over, when you learned how to be a corpsman, you know, and how to treat, you know, these wounds. How did you do that? Either one of you, Bill, I'll go to you first.
It was combat medicine, and we saw videos. Back then it was film.
Right.
We had lectures. We were taught how to apply battle dressings. We learned about the importance of carrying analgesic with us. So we all carried morphine, about blood volume expanders and getting IV started on a helicopter and how to take a blood pressure on a helicopter without using a stethoscope because you can't hear anything, as you know.
What?
That kind of thing. But in addition to that, we learned how to shoot M16. We learned how to shoot a .45, which we all carried, the importance of keeping it clean and operable, and you know, how to assist our Marines. And more often than not, you know, sometimes our job was really boring, and other times it was absolute impossible chaos to deal with. But when it was boring, we carried not over only our own equipment, but the Marines that I dealt with were very protective. And I know Dan will say the same thing. Our Marines were very protective of us, and we were always provided the best protection of anyone in the squad. I routinely always walked beside the machine gunner. And in addition to all my gear, I carried two belts of machine gun ammo for him, because you can go through a lot of bullets
Yes.
very quickly. So the task was shared. I mean, we all, there's a certain amount of gear that has to be carried, and we divided it up. And I don't think you would ask any corpsman that had combat experience, did they only carry their M1 medical gear or anything like that? But, you know, to answer your question, we learned combat medicine, but we also learned survival techniques, and, we needed to know how to shoot and so forth.
Well, the other thing, Dan, how did they prepare you psychologically for what you might see? I mean, you were going to see the most gruesome aspects of war, and you know, just kind of, they didn't just throw you into the fray, did they?
No, not really. And in my case, when I was at Chelsea Naval, that was a hospital that received a lot of wounded people from Vietnam, so I got to take care of those people in their healing phase. I got to see what it was like to be wounded, gunshots, burns, all kinds of trauma, you know, missing limbs, things like that. So that was sort of my introduction while I was still in the States to combat medicine. And when I got to Camp Lejeune, of course, I'm not a very big person. So, of course, all the Marines kind of picked on me and said, okay, I want you to take this 230-pound guy and drag him up the hill and, you know, apply battle dressings and get his wounds under control, which, you know, I did. I was in pretty good shape at the time, so I did that. And that was all in preparation for going into combat in Vietnam.
Okay. We are talking with the author of a book titled Together We Served, a story about Combat Navy Hospital Corpsman in Vietnam by Bill Sheehan, and one of his storytellers is Dan Thompson. And you mentioned earlier that the idea of telling these stories is so important. I feel here, especially here at Veterans Radio, this is what we do. But because we're always afraid that if we don't tell the stories of our, you know, our comrades and in arms and so forth, that they'll be forgotten. And, you know, we can't afford to have that happen. You know, luckily we're not on the wall, but there are many of our fellow veterans that are suffering from the side effects and the after effects of what occurred during our experiences in Vietnam. And the idea of getting their stories down in print is just so valuable. And I'm not letting you go yet, but I wanted to thank Bill for doing this. We did something similar to this in the local area where they interviewed, I think, 10 or so local veterans, and our stories are all in a book that they then they gave out to the high schools and so forth for the kids to read, because, you know, how else are they going to really learn what happened? But I think that the thing where I wanted to go next was, so Bill, when were you in Vietnam?
I was there summer, I think early summer, and I don't have a specific date. I think June, July of 68. Okay. And then I was there roughly July, August of 69.
Okay.
And I've long forgotten the dates, and it's very difficult. A lot of records were destroyed, and medical records were destroyed, and things get lost over years. So I don't have specific dates. And so my year was 68, and I was there, you know, Tet was January of 68. So I was there sort of in the middle of Tet. And just to add on to what Dan said, your first firefight, your first casualty, you are sort of traumatically and instantaneously indoctrinated into combat medicine. And it really, to me, it was I just reacted. And fortunately, my reaction was correct. And, we got the guys out, and, you know, it was a good ending. So many of them were not good endings, but, you learn very quickly. The treatment is patch them up as best you can and get them out of there and get them back to the Battalion A station or the Naval Hospital up in Da Nang. That's where most of our medevacs went. But it was so important to get them out of there as quickly as possible.
Well, yeah. I mean, and that's one of the things that was proven during the Vietnam War. The survival rate was so much higher because we were able to get them out of the field and into a medical facility so quickly. I was not a medevac pilot daily on a regular basis, but we did do quite a few medevac extractions, and you know, it was a good feeling to know that, you know, that the people that we were able to get there, most of them survived.
Those were our medevac pilots were heroes. I mean, they came in, you know, if you have a hot LZ and you're taking fire, you'll throw out a red smoke grenade so the pilots know they're coming in, but they always came in.
Yeah, they always
came in.
Well, that's the thing, you know, he's always coming in hot because you feel, well, what the hell, they're going to miss me anyway. I got to get these guys on the ground out of here. What were we thinking? Mainly because if we went down, then the guys on the ground would protect us. So, you know, that's what I meant by that mutual admiration. So, sure. Dan, when were you in Vietnam?
I think I got there, it was early December of 68, and I left exactly 1 year later to the day, December of 69.
Okay, I think you were there exactly the same time I was. December 12th to December 11th is a way that it worked out. Not that I do remember those dates specifically. And both of you seem to remember in reading your stories that as the Freedom Bird, for those that are listening to us, The Freedom Bird was the commercial airliner that brought us home from Vietnam. And it seems like every one of us had the experience of going up, you know, down the runway. And finally, you know, all four wheels came up and the guy would go into a serious climb and you could see tracers coming up at you. You know, we didn't pay any attention because everybody else was cheering so loudly about finally getting out of that place, as the song goes.
Yeah.
So I can certainly relate to that. And the other thing was that how you know, and Bill, you mentioned this, that, you know, how conditioned you were that when you went out on that first mission, and I forget which one was yours, because not that they all ran together, but each one was just frightening to me as a, you know, a non-core type, corpsman type person, that your training just kicked in. You know, that okay, somebody just got their, unfortunately, we get their, you know, their leg blown off, or, you know, they took a round or they stepped on a mine or whatever the things were. And the book is fairly graphic. You know, they don't go into great, great detail, but they certainly explain that just the horrors of what you two ran up against.
Right, right. When I contacted all of the corpsmen that were contributed stories, I said they will be, there will be a few minor corrections to, terms that the reading public might not understand, LZ for landing zone or whatever it is, military terms or aircraft terms or whatever. Yeah. But for the most part, your stories are not going to be edited. You can be as graphic as you like. And I was very clear about that. And they wrote, all of the writers wrote very clear and concise stories. And some of them were not pleasant to read, but I wanted it to be as real as possible.
Well, that certainly is understandable. We are going to take a quick break here. So, and when we come back, we are talking with the author of Together We Served, Bill Sheehan, and Navy Corpsman Dan Thompson. So when we come back around, we're going to probably get into a little bit of the experiences that you had actually in combat, if you might mind. So everybody kind of gear yourself up for that. Sometimes it's hard to do. So anyway, so you're listening to Veterans Radio, and we will be right back after this.
The Medal of Honor is the highest award for valor in combat given a member of the Armed Forces of the United States. There have been over 3,400 recipients of the nation's highest award. This is one of them. Hospital Corpsman Edward Benfold sacrificed himself to save two of his comrades. Details after this.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.
When his company was subjected to heavy artillery and mortar barrages, followed by a determined assault during the hours of darkness by North Korean forces, estimated at battalion strength, Benfold moved from position to position in the face of intense hostile fire, treating the wounded and lending words of encouragement. Leaving the protection of his sheltered position to treat the wounded, he moved forward to an exposed ridgeline where he observed two Marines in a large crater. As he approached the two men to determine their condition, an enemy soldier threw two grenades into the crater while two other enemy charged the position. Picking up a grenade in each hand, Benfold leaped out of the crater and hurled himself against the onrushing hostile soldiers, pushing the grenades against their chest and killing both the attackers. Mortally wounded while carrying out this heroic act, Benfold, by his great personal valor and resolute spirit of self-sacrifice in the face of almost certain death, was directly responsible for saving the lives of two of his comrades.
The Medal of Honor series is a production of Veterans Radio.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. If you were exposed to toxic substances in the military, a new law called the PACT Act may make you eligible for extra benefits and care. The PACT Act benefits veterans of the Vietnam, Gulf War, and post-9/11 eras. Learn more at va.gov/PACT or call 1-800-MY-VA-411.
Thank you.
back here on Veterans Radio, and we're talking with Bill Sheehan and Dan Thompson, and the book is titled Together We Served, Stories of Combat Navy Hospital Corpsmen Serving in the Vietnam Jungles. All right, let's kind of move into those jungles a little bit, if we can. So, Bill, you were there in the middle of 1968, just a little bit, you know, post-Tet, kind of, and the thing to my audience, you know, we talk about different parts of Vietnam, and then Vietnam was divided into four sections, and the vast majority of the Marines and the Navy corpsmen were up in I Corps, what they call up north, like up near the DMZ, and, you know, I've heard of the Caissons and the Da Nangs and all that area up there. So the Marines treated you very, you were very important to them, you know, corpsmen. Both of you in your books, you talked about how the Marines at whatever unit you were attached to, you know, protected you and, you know, made sure that you kept your head down and so forth. And, you know, you were followed, you know, friends with the machine gunner or the guy who carried the M60 or whatever it was that would help you out. Kind of describe, if you could, Dan, I'll ask you to do this for us. Can you kind of describe a mission where things went badly?
Probably my first severely wounded Marine was our point man had stepped on a landmine. I think I was probably the third or fourth guy back, again, following the M60 machine gunner. So I went up to this Marine, and he had bilateral amputees of both of his legs. His left, I think, was below the knee, completely gone, and his right foot was also completely gone. Still had a boot on his right foot, so I tried to remove his boot to see what was happening, and his foot was actually in the boot at the time, and detached from his leg. We called medevac in. I got him stabilized. I dressed his wounds. I was very surprised at how little blood loss there was, but he was very shocky anyway. Gave him, some morphine. As I said, started an IV. Finally got an IV going on him. Tagged him, and by the time I did that, you could hear the helicopters coming in. So the medevac was very, very quick, fortunately for him. As far as I know, he did all right. I think in one of the reunions, I did find his, and First Marines, I did find his name, and he was still, alive. That was probably about 10 years ago, I guess, 10 or 15 years ago. And Bill and company, we're in charge of the company together. I opted to, as Bill had mentioned, after 6 months, and that was the life expectancy of a corpsman. Was, so that's when you got the option of going back into a, well, relatively secure area, which, again, Bill had mentioned it's really not secure. Or staying out in the bush, and I opted to stay out in the bush. Maybe that was silly, but that was what I did. So my first casualty, as I said, was about maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks after I got into country. So from then on, it was just the daily routine of we did a lot of patrols, a lot of operations, saw, you know, a fair amount of combat, not as much as other people did. Fortunately, I had my training, and as Bill had mentioned, things just sort of happen. It sort of kicks in. Your adrenaline gets going. You don't realize that, you know, maybe 10 or 15 minutes have gone by, and you think, oh my God, you know, it's only been like a few seconds and things happen. So, things happen very quickly sometimes.
So you mentioned that you were able to find out that one of your Marines had survived his wounds. That had to feel great.
Yeah, and it did. Unfortunately, it's been how many, 55 years or 56 years, 54 years, I guess. So your memory fades after a while, and I, for the life of me, I can't remember the guy's name, to tell you the truth. And I can't remember a lot of people's names, and I'm glad Bill finally got a hold of us and brought back some of the people that I say, oh yeah, I remember that guy. I remember, dealing with him. I remember as a corpsman, we did a couple of operations together or whatever. So I'm glad Bill.
Yeah. It's hard because, most of us in that war, we went over as individuals and came home as individuals. And so a lot of times we lost contact with the people that we had served with, mainly because we didn't know their real names to begin with. So many people had nicknames and so on and so forth. And it's like, thanks to people like Bill, who has, gone through the effort of trying to contact these other, members of the whatever organizations that they were in. And you find out that not only that they're alive, which is always great, but you also find out that some of the adventures that you were on were real. And that over the years, you hadn't, made up stuff. I think that's always kind of important too. So Bill, can you describe one of your more, and I don't like to put him this way, but just more frightening experiences, if it's okay.
Sure. I can share with you my first casualty something that, is embedded in my brain that will never go away. And I think of it often, mainly because I think the guy, was treated and lived and was sent back to the States. So I felt good about that. I don't know. Had anything to do with what I did, but nevertheless, it happened that way. We were out on a daytime patrol and it was a squad. So that's 12, 13, 14, Marines. There's a point man, a squad leader, radio operator, machine gunner. And we were in a single line and we were spread out pretty far, in case we took on enemy fire. We were not supposed to, we were about to go into a village and it was a S&D patrol. So that's search and destroy. And all of a sudden there was a gunshot. And of course everybody hits the deck. And then you wait for the second gunshot or you wait to find out where it's coming from or the sound of it and so forth. And everybody was looking around, but we heard one of the Marines started screaming. And I was about three or four people away from the guy that was injured. And here the guy, the Marine in back of this injured Marine was adjusting his pack and somehow his rifle went off and shot the guy in front of him in the knee.
Ooh.
Yeah. So my first experience was friendly fire. There wasn't a enemy within 100 yards of where we were. So I rushed up to him and we got him taken care of. The radio operator came over right away and ask about a medevac. I said, yes, emergency. I got him bandaged up as best I could. Most of his knee was missing, although the lower part of his leg was still attached. It was a direct hit those kind of, it's not a very kind bullet because when it goes in, it turns sideways and, does a lot of damage on its way out.
Yeah, doesn't it? It tumbled, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, and it tumbled along with the kneecap and so forth, and a lot of other things he needed. But I got him patched up and hit him with the morphine, and we got him on a helicopter and got him out of there. And then of course that really helped me to understand a little bit more about combat medicine and how. And it also alerted me to how I was not in tune with my environment when I was working on this Marine. Everything else had just gone away, and I was totally focused on this Marine, and that's how Corman got shot. You know, mm-hmm. they weren't aware of their environment in case you're taking on enemy fire or something like that. But I was happy to hear. Because most of the time, I was happy to hear that he was okay. Because so much of the time, they were medevaced to a hospital, and not that we ever knew their name in the first place. As you indicated, we never did find out what happened to them. So they could have gone back home safely and lived a good life, or they may have died. We don't know. Yeah. But another thing what we learned in FMF school was to, there was a form, I think. Dan, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But there was some kind of a form we were supposed to fill out with if we sent a Marine to on a medevac. And I don't recall ever once doing paperwork. And you know, the federal government loves paperwork.
I was just going to say, you know, or you're in the middle of a firefight, oh, make sure you write down what occurred during that, you know, I guess after action reports were for that purpose.
We were taught that, but it never materialized. I didn't take the time. I was more in, you know, I was trying to get him out of there as quickly as possible. We had ways of communicating. If we hit him with morphine, we would either take the little cassette or the little tube with a needle on it that held the morphine and stick it through their collar of their shirt.
Remember reading that.
More often than not, you would just take a fingertip with blood on it and put an M on their forehead. And that meant that they had morphine. And when they got back to the hospital, the doctors and nurses back there knew that they was, that they had been medicated.
Well, let me, we're coming up. Actually, we've got about 10 minutes to go, a little bit less. Let's leave Vietnam for now. And I encourage people to go out and get this book. It's on Amazon. It's Together We Served. It's the title, Stories of Combat Navy Corpsmen. Just amazing men who did their duty. And I'm really pleased about that. I want to know, what did you do when you got out? Now, Bill, I know that you were a writer and that you were involved in a lot of different things in Hollywood and screenplays and so forth. But Dan, I'd like you to tell our audience what you did when you got out.
Well, I continued my medical career. I went to Northeastern University. I got a degree in respiratory care and stayed in respiratory care until I retired. My wife and I did have the good fortune to spend some time out in Kwajalein Atoll, in the Marshall Islands. And we were out there, I think, 7 years. While I was out there, I worked in the hospital as a respiratory therapist. I also worked as a dive medic because I was into hyperbarics at the time. The government, saw fit to send me to hyperbaric school in Key Largo, Florida. So they actually flew me almost halfway around the world to go to hyperbaric school in Key Largo, and then back to Kwajalein, where I was a hyperbarics technician, respiratory therapist, and basically anything else they wanted me to do. Kwajalein was pretty remote. So I was one of two people that was certified to intubate patients. I had my bags packed all the time. They'd give me a call and say, Dan, we have a patient that needs to go into Honolulu, to the hospital in Honolulu, be down at the runway in 15 minutes. So I'd be down there. We'd pack the patient up, fly into Honolulu, spend a couple of days in Honolulu, and then fly, drop the patient off, and then fly back to Kwajalein. It was a pretty good gig for me.
I was going to say, that's not too shabby.
It was fun.
And are you retired currently now?
Yes, I retired. I live in Florida and retired from the hospital here in Naples.
Okay, down in Naples. I always do this because I like to find people I'd like to go visit.
Yeah.
Not at this time. Not at this time of year.
No.
You guys have rain. We've got heat. I'll wait till it's really cold.
We have rain and heat. So.
Bill, your career after you got out, how long was your commitment to the Navy?
4 years active, 2 years inactive reserves.
Okay. And then you went off to do what?
I went back to school, and like many hospital corpsmen, I stayed in the medical field for quite some time. I went back as a operating room technician in the operating room at a big university hospital. And they were in the market for hiring specifically military technicians because they had so much experience and they were good. And so I was hired the same day that I applied for the job and did that for many years. And like so many of us, stayed in the medical profession and went into critical care or emergency room situations because that's where we did our best work. Dan writes in the book, and I know you read that we thrived on the chaos.
We thrive on chaos, yes. Yes,
we were used to it because we were doing the best we could under impossible situations. And then when we were finished, we missed it. So we went back and tried to find it in civilian life.
Well, I think you were fortunate that, you know, that the skill that you learned while in the Navy allowed you to do that.
Yes.
You know, and all those aptitude tests that you took and said, what, I'm a corpsman? What, are you crazy? you know, I want to be on ships. And I think, Dan, you were the one that said that you ended up on a riverboat for about an hour.
Well, I was actually, there was one of the crew members that took R&R, and they were looking for volunteers, and I was told never to volunteer, but I just had to vote. So I volunteered for it was a patrol boat, and we did just patrols up and down the river. So it wasn't a bad place to be at times.
Again, you know, you're floating up and down a river with all the bad guys on both sides of the river, and you're just wondering, you don't even think about the idea. Why would they want to shoot at me? What are, you know, they wouldn't do that. I think that's that part is always just amazing to me of what, you know, what you did while you were there. And I want to make sure that, you know, that our audience knows that the corpsmen that helped the Marines were from the Navy. They were sailors. They were not Marines. And the Navy was kind enough to lend them to the Marines. And I think that that's something important to remember. And medics, whether they were from the Navy or from the Army or whatever it was, were always the most protected soldiers that we had in whatever unit that you were in, because they could save your life if something bad went on. So I really do appreciate all that you've done. So, Bill, I know that you've written this book. Have you got anything else in the fires right now, or what's going on?
I do. We are all struggling with most of us. All of us were sprayed with Agent Orange. Most of us have had or now have cancer of some sort, and are doing battle with disease. PTSD runs rampant through 100% of everybody in the book. Mm-hmm. So we're all doing battle with that. We are challenged on a regular basis by the VA, getting the paperwork done and waiting for decisions to be made. And sometimes it doesn't go in our favor. And it's a very difficult situation. And veterans deserve better. And so I'm toying with an idea. I'm putting an outline together now of something to that effect. Maybe stories regarding post-war time treatment and so forth. Mm-hmm. But it's very difficult navigating that system.
I've only got a minute to go, but I want to make sure that I let people know. Again, we've been talking with Bill Sheehan and Dan Thompson. Both were Navy combat corpsmen in Vietnam. And the book is Together We Served, and it's got a great amount of information at the end of certain videos that you may want to watch, that you may want to take in, that talk about post-traumatic stress and other things along those lines. So, gentlemen, thank you so very much for being on Veterans Radio. Please let me know how things are going for both of you. And, Bill, if you write another book, let me know. I'd love to have you back.
Thanks for having us. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Dan. All right. So we are coming up on the end of the program. We've got 10 seconds to go. So until next week, this is Dale Thornberry for all of us here at Veterans Radio, and you are dismissed.
God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above. From the mountains, through the prairies, to the oceans, white with foam. God bless America, my